Welcome, everybody. This is PMP Weekly. It is episode 94. We have still six episodes to try to figure out what we do in episode 100. And it is 31st of August, 2020, and we do have a visitor once again on the call, so community evangelist. That would be a good way of putting who Phil is. But let's actually, before we go there, let's actually quickly explain what this is all about. So PMP Weekly is all about what's happening in the Microsoft 365 area in general, and obviously because we come from it slightly from extensibility and development side, we tend to focus on that, but also the other stuff as well, because it's definitely not just about extensibility and development. It's all about how do we build stuff in Microsoft 365 for end users. That's the really important bits. But my name is Sasa Juvonen. I'm from OneDrive SharePoint platform team, and with me as a co-host is Waldek. Who are you?
Hi, everybody. My name is Waldemar Stickert. I am head of product at Rancor. And today, as Ves already said, we have a guest from Switzerland, if I am not mistaken, Mr. Philip Worrell. How do you feel?
Hi there, guys. Glad to have me on. Thank you very much.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I was saying that you're a
community evangelist.
Would that be a good way of putting what you actually do?
So I think that, yeah. Sometimes people say, you know, social media amplifier, community evangelist, trying to direct people in the right way for things around community, and it's actually quite a hard job at times because there's so much going on out there. So, yeah, my name's Philip Worrell. I'm British originally. I don't think that changes anything. But basically, 13 years ago, I moved to Switzerland based on my wife's position, not mine. I worked for a company called Swisscom, who are a gold partner and telecommunications company. We have about 1,000 collaborators across Switzerland who are doing all sorts of things with IT, in relation to IT and cloud. So Switzerland's a strange place in the fact that we're not part of the European Union. So we're very on-prem centric in the market still. We only got our data centers last year. So yeah, we're watching that whole thing move across. And in my time in between what I'm doing, working, basically I'm working in the community. One community group I'm specifically working with is called Regarding 365. And you can find us on regarding365.com. We got a YouTube channel, which is also youtube.com/regarding365. Basically, that started in 2016 with a group of MVPs getting together and saying, oh, yeah, we need to club together and start putting our blogs and things together. So they started doing aggregation of blogs. And it turned into a crowdsourcing type of scenario where we got this, we've got a website which has got a whole bunch of articles, and the audience is around. It can be any sort of subject related to 365. I mean, something's going to Azure, Power Platform. So we've got a lot of user adoption type things in there, opinions, interviews, and you name it. We've even got now, back in May, four or five of the MVPs in the Australia New Zealand region got together and did a whole entire month of a conference through Teams. So basically, we've got all that there. There's some like 118 videos of that. We've got a weekly show which Daniel Glenn and Daryl Webster do. Daryl gets up at some crazy hour on a Tuesday morning every week to go through the message center. It's called the Message Center Show.
That's by the way, for those, can you explain what the message center post is all about? Because so, I think we need to be specific on that one, so people understand the value.
So in 365, in the admin center, you've got the message center, which gives you all the latest updates of what's coming in 365 and all those things that you need to be aware of, so that are coming. Whereas the roadmap tells you, yeah, we're working on this, this is rolling out, whatever. Message center tells you, this is hitting your tenant, this is coming at this particular time. So what Daryl and Daniel do is every week they go through and review all the items that have come up in that past week. And dive into some of the details around those things. I found it really, this is one of the places I picked up with that group. I found it really useful in terms of translating someone else's idea of translating what's there compared to what I've read.
What did Microsoft release and wrote there, and then what it actually means in real world, right? So doing the translation.
Yeah, exactly. And also I hope the one thing they include too is the impact, right? Because oftentimes you will see a change, but what does it actually mean? Like, they will turn something off, but is it a little change or is it a big change? So I think that there is also like angle that you don't get from the update itself, but I hope they cover it too, right, Philip?
Yeah, they absolutely they do. Basically, they go into it and say you really need to take note of this one. This is going to hit your people hard, or this, you know, this thing as well. This is a nice to have change, and basically try and prioritize some of those big changes. Recently, they've done a change where they used to go through everything in the message center. Now they're prioritizing those particular ones that are there because there's just too many messages now in the message center.
Exactly.
And things like that. So yeah, it's fun because on the when we do this live, it's on European time, Central European time at 8 p.m. on Mondays. But it's also available for playback on YouTube. And it's also as a podcast as well. You can get that on podcast if you don't want it on video. But basically, we have a live chat going as well in YouTube. So we're, you know, quite a few people in there talking away about what's happening on those things and what issues they're having and things like that, things they want to point out about it. So there's a bit of interaction going on there as well. That one's a regular one. We've got a few other irregular series that different people putting things out there, like Stephen Collier, one of our MVPs in the UK, does a whole, he's got his own channel with his own series of things, What's New in Teams. So when new features come out, he reviews them, shows them, gives a little opinion on them. So people can just quickly grab those things and continue keeping working out with those. We have a few other things going on in there. We're probably getting about 20 to 30 blog posts a month of different things from about 20 different collaborators around the globe. Yeah. So we're all big and global in terms of barrels all the way down in Auckland, New Zealand, to people in the Midwest of the US, to the West Coast of the US, working on these things. Getting people together to do things as well is kind of hard because we do obviously time zones with all those people. Mm-hmm. We do try to meet at least once or twice a month and help people out, mentor them in blogging and how to create videos and stuff like that. So we've got our own little tenant and community going on there, sub-community of people who can help people out.
Cool. So you mentioned you have blog posts, you're on social, YouTube. Is there, what is like one, is there anything that you do not do? And two, like, what is your ambition? Like what is the end goal? Imagine you can achieve anything in the world. You can
unlimited
imagine.
Resources in the world.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, where would you like to be?
That's hard. That's a real hard one. We've struggled with that. The core team of we talked about where do we want to go next? What do we want to do next? We want to do more collaborative events type things. So we want to get more of the team together and do. We've done panel discussions and hackathons and things before. We did a two hour one with the for a hackathon for setting up 365 at the beginning of all the lockdown period with COVID. So basically, we went to say, okay, people need some information. So we went and did a whole 2 hour hackathon and focused on different areas and things with different members of the team, which was fun to do. I think. Over the summer, it's died down a bit, so we need to pick up some more stuff. And probably more than anything else, you know, we just enjoy being a community, you know, and helping each other out with collaborators. We're always open to new people coming in and giving a positive spin on what we're doing and how people, you know, how people can get more visibility out there or the things they can do.
Yeah. So. Absolutely. Sounds really good and absolutely aligned on I think what the community should be doing in general. So raising other people in the podium and making sure that people understand the value of what we do as a what we share for the community, is it scripts or PowerShells or articles or YouTube videos, and making sure that people actually find them, because there's so many people who are moving to the cloud still or are in the cloud and they struggle because they don't know what it means and how to make things happen. And plus, Philip, like I said, the cloud is moving so fast forward, and it's Azure, it's Microsoft 365, Power Platform, it's all of the cross. It's really hard to actually stay up to date. So.
And also, I think another interesting angle to that is that whenever you already create something by yourself, right? So you create videos or samples, you put it out there, but if you just start, you might get the views, but you will probably not get that much interaction. Not to mention, like, having somebody coach you on that or help you set the next step. So I think there is also the value in being surrounded with like-minded people who also create content, who went through these, you know, growing pains, if you like, and who know the, let's say, the do's and don'ts, how you share stuff, how you write, how you create, and so forth. Basically trying, helping others to grow and to improve their skills, not really technically, but more on the content creation side. So I think that there's also a value to be a part of a community for that part.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, we'll come back on the recording in a second. I actually wanted to go back on the start where, Philip, you said that you're from Switzerland, because Switzerland, like you said, is a bit special place. It's not part of EU. It has its own different rules. And the data center came pretty recently. I still remember when I was visiting, when I used to be a consultant 8 years in Microsoft Consulting Services, and I was flying across to Europe and visited some companies who were partly in Switzerland and partly in Luxembourg, and that was so weird because just across the river in a bridge, no borders, obviously, no nothing, but completely different rules. It's like, wow, how is this possible? So, can you explain a bit on the difference and also why the data center is such an important thing for Switzerland?
Yeah. Well, with the Swiss data centers basically gives an opening for people to finally go cloud. I mean the whole thing has been within the borders, keeping the data there, because they have some strict privacy rules about data going across borders. There's a lot of pharmaceuticals and banking and international organizations here, so in the market they want to make sure that if they're going to go cloud, they need to have something that they will sit between any of those regulatory rules and things that they need. Also, I think people are still very hesitant to let go of their systems that are on-prem. Yeah. You know, it's always been a fight. Mm. I've seen it in the US, I've seen it in the UK, I've seen it in different places where people, we're not going cloud because of this, this, and this. And I say, well, if you need to, these are how to address these particular issues. So persuading people that it's the right thing to do. There's always a trade-off. There's always the control versus the convenience of it. And some people still want to maintain that little control. They like that. They don't like being out of that control and having a vendor tell them exactly what they, what they can and can't do with the system. I mean, this always comes back to the usual thing about SharePoint, which is basically, I got SharePoint on-prem. It's fully customized. I want to put it in the cloud.
Good luck with that, buddy.
Yeah, so those are the things that are the challenges for people. Yep. The whole mentality of how you change and the pace of change and how you get that change communicated, and filtering out what's relevant to you is hard for people to actually understand. I still even now see people say to me, "Oh yeah, we're going to do it like this," and I go, "Doesn't work like that anymore," but it's always worked like that. And I'm like, doesn't anymore.
Exactly.
You're right, but basically you need to start changing up, because the world is changing.
Yeah.
The whole way we do work is changing. So again, things like digital workplace and transformation and all those kind of things are going to creeping in more into the market now. So I joke with people sometimes when I talk about Switzerland, and I say, they come to Switzerland and I say, yeah, better wind your watch back 5 to 10 years, because some things are about normal, but other things we don't have yet.
Is that Christopher Nolan effects going back in time? So because how did you, just out of curiosity, I'm intentionally now shuffling the time frame as well. So how did you, Philip, ended up doing what you're doing? So let's go back in time still.
Way back when.
How long have you got? I've had an IT career now lasting 31 years. So I've done a bit of anything and everything, starting in support all the way.
Yeah.
So. late 80s, early 90s. So I've been there, seen a lot of things, done a lot of things, worked for a lot of companies, everything from companies with less than 100 people to 100,000 people plus, right? So worked on different business cases, use cases, different technologies. I started in support, my first job out of college. I basically went straight into doing support work, working on help desks and things. Ended up in doing things like software distribution and packaging and scripting and desktop engineering kind of works, and then to server stuff. And then I ended up in web technologies. So in the early to mid 2000s, I was doing all sorts of stuff with IIS and seeing this thing called SharePoint portal server add-ins popping up on my servers and not knowing what it meant. So, you know, I was a user of SharePoint for years in that respect. But in the last 5 years, jumping ahead, I got called in to do a project, to help a project with a migration project for a non-government, non-profit organization, international one, going from 2007 to 2013. And that started off when we were partway through the 2013 migration when we were told, hey, guess what? You're going to the cloud.
And you're like, oh.
So we went one to the other to the other. So within 18 months to 2 years, we'd gone from total on-prem to online.
Wow.
And I've been there for another few more years since, but basically we've been gradually getting to more and more towards using the cloud stuff. We're currently rolling teams to the organization, building a bigger digital workplace type service behind that as well, so we can get people more up to speed with what's going on and keep people up to date a bit more. Yeah. We think because
that seems actually a big jar. Sorry, Phil. That's actually kind of a typical thing. People come to the cloud with having the old classic SharePoint in on-prem, and then they start actually looking around on, oh, there's a lot of other stuff here as well.
Right? Like,
exactly.
Services, yeah. Like you have apps.
And then there's the IT people and HR people who are like, no, can we hide all of this stuff? This is too much. Our employees cannot actually take this. It's way too much. Classic discussion.
Absolutely classic discussion. I mean, it's like we hit a lot of stuff from the beginning, and gradually over the last year and a half, you know, we've just basically left things open and then generically introduced a few things that they found useful depending on business cases that came in. Yeah. But now we want to start training them properly about how to do certain things. So it's just taken a lot longer than I'd expect.
Yeah, I think there's still the day job. So people need to do the day job as well. It's not just about the transition.
And also I can imagine there's this part where, like, in a past on-prem, you would need to turn things on for them to be available. Whereas here, you go to the cloud where you get a lot of things. You get lists, you get Delve, you get Stream, you get web apps, you get everything is on by default. And it's not even an easy thing to turn them off. Like, there is no switch, like, turn off this and this. No, it's like, well, if you kind of don't want to use Delve, but you will lose also like these 20 other things. And then Office web apps, is there even a way to turn them off? Probably not, right? So it's a whole kind of different game. Like, how do you ensure adoption? And even from the HR point of view, not as much as critique that we don't want to let people use it, but more like, how do we train them? How do we bring it in a meaningful way that they are not overwhelmed, but that they can use it in a meaningful way in their work?
Yeah, that's the challenge. And as you say, you have to keep the day job has to keep going. So what they're doing. So I'm making that time in people's schedules to get them interested and involved. You know, and sometimes it means going down to those individuals and finding out what their pain points are and saying, okay, these are your pain points. Okay, here's how we can map that to a particular cause. You know, and that is not exactly the most efficient way to do it, but it's sometimes the better way to do it in terms of start with small cases, get those little victories, and then word spreads. So there's different ways of going attacking those issues. But
sorry for putting a Philip on spot on that one. Any good examples on that one? Concrete examples? Recent examples?
concrete examples of it. I mean, right now, with my customer I've been working with for years, they are basically, they work in the health area. So they're dealing with lots of people in low-income countries. So Sub-Saharan Africa, Southeast Asia, South America, Latin America, in places, and all their stuff, they've got all their contacts and partners based in those areas. And obviously with the travel ban right now, they can't go anywhere. They're usually people from the organization are flying out to these different locations to work out what they need to provide them and do all the negotiations around funding and things. And basically they can't do that. They are stuck. So we've been basically working with those teams to work out how we can best leverage Teams as a way of communicating with those groups easier, whether it's meetings, calls, collaboration on files, etc. So it's been a good way to turn that around. It's not their ideal, but basically where possible, you know, we're trying to facilitate that as best as we possibly can. And through working with those teams, we basically just starting to understand more about what they do and how they do it. And, you know, where it really works. One of the examples I got recently was the fact that for now they don't have to just email someone and wait for a response. They can get hold of the person because they've got their phone with them. They can get a response and basically get an answer to a question a lot quicker.
Depending on the person, how fast the persons are responding, but still.
They're finding response times are quicker than before. That helps speed up the process of what they need so that people can get the help on the ground that they need. Absolutely.
Good example. I think we're still in the middle of this weird 2020, what's going to happen next, but it's all of the travel and how this impacts on this kind of companies. It's really interesting actually to see in, let's say, 2022 or 2023, how much we travel less, or do we travel less? Do we travel at all? So there's a lot of interesting unknowns still. So, but then I think it's actually super, super cool to see how the companies are adjusting, and obviously they are forced to adjust the way they work as well to keep them floating. But it's really cool to see the learnings and how people are learning to be successful with remotely. So, as a simple example, I really don't remember Waldeck when we met physically face to face.
I actually know. That was when you were doing. That was the. I'm not sure what was the name of that. That was around 2010. You were doing Ignite tour in Amsterdam.
Oh, that was the first time when we met. Yeah, I know. Yes. But the last time. The last time
that would probably be ESPC.
ESPC last year. Yeah, that's true. That is true. Yes.
Not the last year, the year before that. Because I wasn't the last year. So the last year I missed ESPC. So that's ESPC 20.
Which was Copenhagen.
Dublin. No, or Copenhagen. Copenhagen. Yeah, because Dublin was the first one, and then second was Copenhagen. Yeah. So that would be ESPC almost 2 years back.
There we go. Yeah. So
2 years already. Jeez, time flies, huh?
Yeah. Anyway, so luckily we have these tools. We have this technology which actually helps us to do this, which is we like said so many times in the discussions that we were lucky. Obviously, whatever happens is highly unpleasant and not a suitable thing, but we're lucky that it happens on this level first time when we have this technology, because if this would have happened like 20 years ago or 10 years ago, the situation would have been much more catastrophic.
Another thing that I wonder about is how others experience it, right? Because like for me, I've been working at home for 4 years now, plus. So this is my reality. I don't see my colleagues in person. Like I see them once every few months, right? I see you every few years, apparently, right? So like for me, it's like we jump on a call and that's how I work. So for me, it's just like, well, the COVID thing, well, I cannot go out to the park, or I couldn't. Now it's open again. So it's like, but other than that, it's like, it's Monday, right? Yeah. Whereas everybody else, like if you are used to being surrounded with people in an office, well, then I can imagine this is way more of a shock to you.
Yeah.
Earlier in my career, I did 5 years working from home for an American-based company when I was in the UK.
So and did me, it work?
Working from home? Yeah. I mean, everything was on conference calls. I used to get nice trips to the States every now and again to meet up with the team and meet people, do the face-to-face, and that made things easier if you know the people. I think one of the hard parts right now is for anybody who's just come into an organization, doesn't know anybody. That's the real hard part. But you know, with my customer right now, we do have the office open with all the precautions in place. We're trying for 45% of the entire office open across the week, so people go in different days, different weeks. I found it only makes sense if your colleagues are there, specific ones you want to specifically see. Doesn't make sense if you're there on your own. But yeah, it's a shock to the system. I mean, my wife was working from home for the first time ever. So yeah, I know exactly. You know, for her, it's like, ooh, I'm not sure what
it's a change,
to do.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, actually, there was an interesting thing I heard from a person whose spouse is also like first time working at home. And she's like, I can do my work in 2 hours. What am I going to do the rest of the day? It's like, there you go. Yes. Like, there is your efficiency, right?
Yeah.
Yes. If there is less this around, yes, you, like, you can do, yes, you can do your work and be done with it. But then there's also interesting thing, Philip, you mentioned, like, if you join a company or even team, yeah, and you're new, like, sure, you can jump on a call and meet people, but is that really how you bond? Right? Because, like, sure, you can do your work and you can talk about the content, the matter, you know, the work, but it's really how you bond. Like, will you really become cohesive team through just that? Or is there something else needed that will, you know, like this grease that will bring the team together?
I think it's hard because if people don't know each other, I find there is definitely a difference in attitude between people who have met and people in real life and people who haven't. There's always that little icebreak window, but as soon as you meet them, the attitude changes. Because, okay, they're a real person. They're okay. They're human. They're not a robot.
Exactly.
But basically that really helps and helps break the ice, as it were, for those things. If you can do it, even if it's just go somewhere and go for a coffee,
yeah,
you know, for an hour or something, that helps tremendously. That's the big get over the hump things. You may not be able to meet your entire team or whatever, but meet people irregularly on different times. I mean, when I was working with one American company, we used to get to see each other probably about once every 3 to 6 months, and I was in the office for about a week or so. But, you know, it really, you know, I got around some of the people I was working with on projects that I weren't on my team, and got to meet those kind of people. Those things really help, because then once you do that, then the conference calls and stuff become easier. Because when I was doing it, there wasn't the video technology, or it was extremely pixelated. It looked like Minecraft, you know, for a video call. But yeah, it was like that back then. But we, you know, always conference calls and stuff were the thing that basically helped us a long way, because we couldn't do stuff. But you know, the breaking the ice the first time is good. Once you've done that, everything else becomes easier.
Absolutely.
You know, I've had project meetings where I've gone in to be the technical lead or something, and my manager's on the other end of the phone, and people said, no, we don't want Phil. Why? Because he's in different time zone. You know, like, and I said, you know, I'm here, right? you're actually on the call, and you're saying,
you're like, I am sitting next to you, dude.
So, yeah, and people have explained, said, no, try it. And then, you know, they're a couple of weeks saying, they're coming saying, hey, you know, it's really easy, or it's, you know, but it's an attitude thing as well, and whether your job facilitates that kind of work.
Yep.
You know, I was working projects at the time, so projects were a lot easier. So I could do the work in the project in the mornings, because it was an remote US time zone. In the afternoons, it was all project meetings, and then rinse and repeat every day.
That sounds familiar, to be honest. I can relate on that.
strange that. Yeah, you're still doing it. You know.
But in our case, so obviously, so I'm being productive on daytime, and then evenings are just meetings, and then I close up at like 10 or 11 in the evening. Mm. So it's just time zones are dictating that one. And if needed, I can go 1 a.m., but I rarely do it because it doesn't make any sense. But it's been interesting to see also from our side, we had a relatively like 2 weeks in the offices closed in Redmond. We had a few recruits joining Microsoft and our SPFX team. And that's actually pretty mind-blowing, coming as a really young person, as a college graduate, to a new team starting in Microsoft. And you're like, wow, and remotely.
I can work at home.
But obviously, the situation in Redmond has slightly gone better from that moment. So they've been having lunch meetings and all of that. Offices are still basically closed. So, but it's the meeting at least once here and there, face to face, which helps to actually break the ice, like you said, Philip. So definitely, good practice. Now, could we, let's actually jump on the articles for a while and then come back on and talk about other things as well. Well, continue the discussion, but let's do a quick update on the articles. And I'm double checking that I'm sharing the right one. Here we go. So I'm not sharing my emails or anything for anybody.
Recipes
so.
For Finnish cakes.
Yes, traditional Finnish cakes. Now,
whatever they are.
Never had one. I have no idea. So. Okay, so from Mark Cashman from SharePoint Community Blog, our SharePoint blog, Agile IT Management for your SharePoint Power Intelligent Intranet. This is actually kind of a nice summary blog post related on adjusting SharePoint site address, because you can change the URL, update the root of SharePoint site, which is super important that people understand that they can do that. So they can, you can flip the communication site or a call site to the root of the tenant, which is really cool. The multi-geo will help in many cases if needed, so you can have a tenant more locally somewhere all, and then support multiple languages across the internet. Really, really important thing as well. So nice summary on the features, classical features, what people are asking, how to get started. Now, we didn't have that much more, let's say, official blog post this week, except this morning I pushed out this one, which is the new SharePoint season version released for SharePoint Online. And Philip, I think you had a good clarification why these blog posts are important. I'll give you a time frame on that one. Obviously, we want people to use Microsoft Graph where possible, but there are certain scenarios where CSM is the only surface where we can add settings, like for the tenant object, as an example. And that relates on what Philip was also saying, because we're listing here all of the different properties and all of the different things. You want to, Philip, explain why this is interesting?
It's interesting as one other way of actually seeing what's coming.
Yeah.
So basically, if you're reading down those properties, you can go, there's a setting for that, or there's a
this
setting for this coming.
Exactly.
This gives you another idea of what changes are coming. In the SharePoint and Teams world now. So it's
absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. One of the main let's say is the changes here. There will be Microsoft Graph APIs for document sets as well. And I'll follow up on where we are with that one. But the new thing on CSM side is document set version collection. So you can get access on the version details of a document set, which is super important as well. And that was primary reason why we actually pushed out this update for now. Now, let's talk about the recording 365. So a recording 365 is the address. And we can see actually a lot of the people, famous people actually in here, and people which people should know. This is from Ignite Orlando. When was the picture taken, by the way?
That was 2018. The last time we, as a group, most of us could manage to actually get together. It seems it's the one place we try and get people together.
Yeah. This year Ignite didn't. Well, Ignite will be remotely happening within a few weeks, but slightly different. I was looking forward to going to New Orleans, but hey. Things are what they are. So nothing but the latest articles here within the last week, chat using DAX in Microsoft Teams from a Daryl. Daryl as service is a... Well, where does that come from? Actually, can you explain where the Daryl as service comes from?
I think he just named himself that based on when everything was starting to go cloud. So basically everything was as a service. Yeah. So he seems himself as a service with his modern workplace scenarios, channels and things that he does. And very much Daryl's actually a user adoption architect, a specialist. So most of his stuff actually resides basically in the end user adoption realm. And what he's trying to do with his current series of things is basically show people some ways of doing things in depth with Teams.
Yep.
So it's all kind of cool stuff.
Yeah, really cool stuff as well, definitely. And those basics, that's the one thing what we talked about so many times in the BMP Weekly as well, that the basic videos, getting started videos and how things work, they have a massive demand. And people just don't know how to stay up to date on what's happening. This one is from Daniel. So from last week as well, Microsoft Flash, SharePoint, Microsoft Teams, and OneDrive changes in Microsoft 365. So this is basically the summary of the different announcements, right?
Different announcements related to SharePoint OneDrive. He's got this little video there as well, which actually just demos how to schedule posts, news posts in ConSite, because it's not always obvious.
Cool stuff, and good call out on the message center messages as well, and what they actually mean, and all of that. And then the last one from last week was from Sarah staying on top of Microsoft 365 changes and an organizational perspective, super, super important thing as well. Anything what you want to call out in here, Philip?
Sarah, Mike Mandrani, and Antonio Mayo have started doing weekly videos in there around different all sorts of topics, and they're picking random questions from people and then basically hitting them on the fly. So, yeah. Cool. They've got this series going on that's about all sorts of information. They had another great one about what to do if you ever get a security breach. So basically, first rule is don't
just
panic.
One question that you can talk about for
hours. Exactly. Yep. So that's a great idea, by the way. And with all due honesty, I actually had the same idea in my endless to-do list on starting to do. So I completely understand this because there's so many questions that people are asking. It's good to actually get them covered and mentioning things. So really, really cool stuff. So really, really okay. And then in here, you can also access the recording YouTube channel, which is the recording 365. So super easy to remember how to get there. So really cool. And all of the videos are getting released in here. So you said like how many videos in a week, just out of curiosity?
I don't know how many in a week, but certain ones like Message Center Show are weekly. Basically, what happens here is we also crowdsource. So as people create videos, they share to our playlist.
Yep.
So we come to one place. So
I think that's really great way of approaching these things as well, aggregating as much as possible, because rather than, so to say, competing, let's make sure that people find what's relevant for them.
Exactly.
Rather than just saying, no, don't go there. My stuff is much better. No. Let's build the stuff together.
And I guess at the end of the day, so it's twofold, right? Sure. At the end of the day, people might come for an author.
Yep.
But whether they find a person through here or through here, then that is irrelevant. It's irrelevant how they arrive you, as long as they find the content that they need and then they can engage with the person that is able to help them, right?
Absolutely. Cool. On other articles, Teams just told me that 5 minutes to go before the meeting stops, but we do have extended time, so we agreed on that. That's, by the way, a great feature. It's because it's popping up on Teams.
Is it already available for everybody else? No.
It might be that it's not available for everybody else. Did I just spill the beans? Oh, there's things to happen. So I don't think it's a secret, but it's a great feature, by the way, which is coming out.
I think it was announced publicly, but it's not available to everybody else yet.
Yeah.
So depending on your tenant or
I got the message. Now on the CLI side. So while you want to probably talk about this one. So the latest version was 2.13, right?
Correct. And we are moving on. So coming weekend, we will be releasing CLI version 3, which will be also renamed to CLI for Microsoft 365. So we want to align our CLI with the new naming of 365, going from Office 365 to Microsoft 365, basically to stay consistent with that and nothing like, hey, so this is for Office 365, but I am on Microsoft, so do I miss it? No. So the idea is for us to basically let everybody know that that is CLI for your Microsoft 365 tenant and everything you have in there. So we changed the name, and with that trickled a lot of things that we had to change all over the place, from variables to environment variables, settings, and everything and anything, just to stay aligned with the name. And then we also use the timing of having a major version to clean up everything that we would deprecate over the last year, and then basically give you new version, new major version that is clean and ready for at least another year, we hope more.
Yeah. And this is a good administrative tool as well. So obviously there's the BMP PowerShell, there's the SharePoint Online PowerShell, there's Microsoft Teams PowerShell, there's the Craft PowerShell, but then there's the CLI for Microsoft 365. Why would you use this, Waldeck? Putting it on spot. Every single week I'm putting it on spot.
So it's one, yeah, exactly. Like every single week you're putting it on spot. I'm like, so our ambition is to give you one single tool that you can use to manage M365 across the board. Whether it's SharePoint, whether it's Teams, whether it's Exchange, whether it's Flow, PowerApps, and whatnot, including even upgrading your SPFX project. Are we there yet? Not yet. We have a long way to go, but every single week we have new version, new release with more commands and fixes and improvements, basically trying to get to the point where we have enough or we cover everything, right? So our ambition is to cover everything that there is to cover so that you have a single tool to use, and you can use it on your desktop, on Windows, on Mac, on Linux, even in Azure, right? So since a few months, we are already available directly within the Azure Cloud Shell, right? So basically giving you one tool to manage your whole tenant.
Yeah. And the 3.0 are coming out within a week. So
yes, exactly.
Less than a week. Now, this one was from Yannick Rickmans, add a task from Microsoft To-Do from Message in Microsoft Teams with linked resources. Really cool stuff now with the To-Do APIs are available in Microsoft Graph, so people clearly focus on this one and do automation on that one. If you're using To-Do, this is super, super cool way of then adding stuff and adding tasks to yourself to follow. So.
But also there is this another aspect, another improvement which you have now on the screen, which is a trigger for selected message in Teams. This is so really good because like you don't need to find like this really elaborate way, like how do I create something, how do I do something with this message? You can do it. So this trigger allows you to basically create action on a message in your team. So you are already in Teams, you are already in context of that. And then you click that and you can do something with that. So you can send it to email, you can put it on planner, you can create to do, you can put it on SharePoint list, you can send it to somewhere else somewhere. So basically it gives you this really, really simple way of taking a message in Teams and doing something with that, retaining the context as opposed to trying to
like somewhere and clinking back.
Exactly. And then you have UI. Yeah. Okay, so from that list, pick your messages. And so these are the last 100, pick the right one. Like, really? Like, that wouldn't work, right? So this is a really, really cool improvement in Teams.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Cool stuff on that side. Now, moving on to the articles, a SharePoint Event Receiver to Azure Storage Queue. A SharePoint Event Receiver to Azure Storage Queue. So how to add SharePoint events, happening functionalities there, and how we're adding that task to the storage queue for processing. So really cool article from Joel Rodriguez. Talk about how you can do that then with the Logic App, which is almost like Power App, but Logic App in the Azure side. So the quick difference between Power Automate and Logic App is basically the abstraction layer.
The audience,
because of the abstraction layer, but underlying technology is pretty much the same. So. Cool stuff from there. Now, this one is from Michael Mendes. Power Apps and SharePoint dynamically get the site URL from the list used in an app and make your app flows easily reusable. That's a lot of dynamically get a site URL from a list used in an app and make your app flows easily reusable.
So you build an app in there, you use a list, and you want to have the URL of this list in your app so that you can reuse it and not have it tied to a tenant.
Absolutely. And basically collecting that one, and he's showing then the functionality and how to make those things happen. Really cool stuff as well. Now, a Microsoft Teams messaging extension with authentication and access to Microsoft Graph, part 5. So this is the action-based variant, which is the thing, and from Marcus Muller. So really cool stuff as well. So he's been having this series on how do you set up things, how do you use the Graph in this context and in the Microsoft Teams messaging extension. So really cool stuff. Marcus. Laura had a really, really, really super popular article. So this one had like cachillion retweets and likes and all of that last week. So really cool stuff. And how can we extend Teams with the custom apps, the non-technical explanation? So I think these are really, really powerful because they explain the basics so that the customers can understand how they can extend and what's possible. So rather than just concentrating on the technology and the code, and Laura writes really, really well and calling out all of the different things and how to extend and how to do that. So not about technology, all about what could be done. So really cool stuff. This one was from this guy called Wild Egg Mastercards. So it's your email message, isn't it, for subscribers?
Yes, correct. Yeah. Correct. But it's also available on my blog. And basically the idea is that if you need to interact with the SharePoint API, like oftentimes you would get REST because like back in the days, we also had the JSON that's deprecated. There is no investment going on in that anymore. Yep. So alternative is REST. But with REST, the thing is that it's really verbose, right? And it's just a long string, like the whole URL is just a long string you type, and there is no way for you to investigate that, assuming you do a GET. If you do a POST, well, there's also the payload you need to build by yourself. And it's really easy to miss something. and there is no design time feedback on that. Basically, the only way for you to check if it works, well, is to run your app, go to the point, assuming the code run, and only then you can see, did it work? So that's really inefficient way. And there is a better way that you can use, which is basically PNP.js, which is a Fluent API that allows you to, well, that gives you basically this design time feedback, strong typings for a lot of actions, if not all of them, whenever you want to call an API. So you can know already up front when you build things if anything is right or wrong, and you can adjust it directly without having to every single time build your code, step through all of it, only to be able to test if it works.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Plus, to be fair, it's much more easier to use your writing
on size. Yeah, absolutely.
Rather than all of these headers and all of these things. And it gets tricky. Obviously, under the covers, that still happens. But that's the beauty of PNP.js. It abstracts all of that away from the developers. So you don't have to worry about it. And this one is from Wondolora. So flow when a SharePoint column is updated. So this one was announced last Thursday or Friday by Jax, basically. So you know, you can actually say when a column of a SharePoint list is updated, flow fires. And that's really, really cool. There was like more than 1,000 requests or votes on this one in user-wise. So really, really cool stuff. Jax being one of my teammates in the platform team side, responsible of these things in a SharePoint side. And then we had an article from Mark D. Anderson, M365 maturity model. So this one is something which he, together with community members, MVPs and non-MVPs, have been collecting on building really kind of multi-article series on the 365 maturity model. So really cool stuff. Then we had two technical updates, .NET update on Azure breaking SharePoint provider hosted app parts. So just updating on this one, if you're running into these things, how to set those things, how to fix those things if you're using provider hosted add-ins in SharePoint. Absolutely good thing to be aware. You will have to adjust some of the settings in the system web to make things work properly. And another one, kind of a technical update, was SharePoint provider hosted add-ins stopped working in a Safari 13.1 browser. Again, settings, and configurations which are causing the issue. So if there's a customer who's running into this case,
good to
document
know.
That. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Exactly. Good. Let me actually stop presenting and let's do a quick summary. Anything what we missed regarding
365.
any recaps on the recording 365, Philip, from your side? People should be subscribing. There's a rest. There's probably an RSS feed. There's the YouTube subscribing there as well.
Yep, there's all those kind of things, and check out things like the Message Center show, just to, you know, to keep, to help you keep up to date. That's always a good place to start with that. We have thousands of articles in there, and a lot of the older ones are some of our popular ones as well.
Yeah,
people go to. So yeah, chances are, if you're searching for something on the internet for a particular topic around 365, one or several of those articles will come up on regarding 365. So it's a good place to go and keep up with things that are happening.
Absolutely. Now, coming back on kind of a closing in as well, what's happening this week? What's on your schedule? Let's start with Waldeck. What's on your schedule this week? Anything interesting?
Absolutely. So we're wrapping up the work for CLI for Microsoft 365 V3. We have all the code that we want to ship, we have in. So that we might include something more, we might not. That depends. But other than that, we're ready. So we will ship that. And then we will be basically going on with the work on V3.1. So for us, it's just like, well, we do a release. It's like nothing big. There will be a release, an announcement, and the live goes on, right? Because basically the way we approach it is that every month we have a release, and the scope of the changes determines whether that's a major release, which we try not to do too often because it breaks people.
Yep.
Right? So we do it typically, so far we've done it once a year. But other than that, we have a release every month, and basically whatever makes it, that's being shipped. Whatever does not make it, well, that will make it next month.
Yep.
So that's the approach that we have. Yeah. Other than that, last week I've been fiddling with a Power Platform connector against an API in Azure secured with Azure AD B2C. And that's a beast of itself. Yeah. So you have an Azure AD, you have an API in Azure secured with Azure AD B2C, and you want to connect to that API from a connector from our platform.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's a thing of itself. It works. And now the next step is to get it certified so that it's available for everybody.
Yeah.
That's for a thing that I'm working on at Rancor. Other than that, I am looking into trying to build a model around data, like how data is stored around 365. What are the different kind of objects? Where are they? How do you access them? And trying to model that. And the biggest quirk is like the whole thing around tenant and subscription and account resources in Azure. Like how do these things relate to each other? Like is this subscription falls under tenant? Like you have account on top, then you have tenant, then you have subscriptions, then resources, but then there are also things that are across all of them. It's like trying to make sense out of that is really interesting exercise.
Yeah. Makes sense. At some point we'll have probably an article on that one from you then, right? Who knows, perhaps. Maybe. What about you, Philip? Anything interesting on your agenda for this week?
It's mostly continue on with we're rolling teams to the organization right now. So all the questions and answers, how do I do this? Why is this doing this funny thing? You know, and all that kind of stuff. Between that, we're ramping that up.
Sorry, Philip, just out of curiosity, what was the previous software people were then using? If there probably was a video tool.
They're currently still using partially BlueJeans as a video conferencing tool. They have that in place, and they had Skype for Business as well. So we're moving the whole Skype for Business online to Teams only by the end of next month. So that's why we're ramping things up to get everybody over to Teams only mode, and get people really onboarded. We've taken a phased approach, whereas a lot of organizations went and hit everybody with Teams as soon as lockdown came in place. We're still taking a phased approach for things. People still using SharePoint and finding out, discovering all the new tools and things like that. So a lot of training, a lot of things around that to do. I'm also doing my first proper Power App. You know, not just experimenting. Actually doing a proper Power App in there. I got some automations and stuff in Power Automate to go and do for that. Last week I was working on the PMP search parts, the new stuff.
Yeah.
So I was doing that for a department. Brown's doing that for a department last week to create them. You know, they wanted to know how to search across different things. So I created one with verticals and things.
How was the experience?
It's the first time that I've done stuff in search. Basically, so I had to get my head around some of these things in search, with all the options and everything else that are in there, because the guys have done a fabulous job of. There's so many options where we used to, we'll get a web part and there's like one tick box.
Yes.
So this has got so many things, so many moving parts, and to get it right. So it took a lot of trial and error on my part. But basically I got there in the end, and they now have verticals to do looking at their own site versus all of SharePoint versus specific libraries and specific criteria. So they've got a few things they have missing, like links to the original folder as opposed to just the actual initial files themselves and details.
Yeah.
So that took me a couple of days, but basically I've got that doing now, so that should be quicker every time anybody wants that.
Yeah.
So that was fun to do.
So on my side of the thing, so last week I was I'm really having a hard time on figuring out one telemetry issue, which is so painful. So really, really banging my head here, hours and hours. And then you finally realized that the telemetry issue was because of the locking was every now and then done in capitalized and every now and then not capitalized. So basically that caused the double entries case sensitivity, caused double entries, and it broke down the whole telemetry pipeline, which is like.
But that's an interesting thing, right? Because the group by clause didn't group that, but the primary key did saw that as separate, as the same, which is like.
That's a classic thing with SQL Server. It depends on how the SQL Server has been set up. Is it in case sensitive, or case sensitive? Is it in case sensitive?
I would expect to both the group by and primary key work the same way. And I was like, this one doesn't see it as one, but this does. Like,
sure, sure. Again, so interesting challenges. Yeah. But for this week, we are now finalizing our Ignite recording plans and all of that. So that's coming pretty soon. We do have the BNP virtual conference ongoing right now on Tuesday when this video goes live as well. So interesting to see. And we had 1,800 subscribed, registered attendees on that one. Obviously, not every single one of them will arrive.
Of course they will. It's BNP.
Yes, they never do. So that's fine. Let's see how many people we actually got. And then what else is happening?
Plenty. Any updates on SPFX V1.12?
Nope.
Not planning.
1.12. That's a fair point, though. Maybe we should have the monthly community call concentrating on the future of SPFX. That could be a good
thing. There you go. For the first.
I'll get the team on the... We have the monthly community call coming up within a week, so we should probably actually focus on that one again. So it's been a while when we actually talk about what's coming. So should be good.
Cool.
But I think that's it for this one. So thank you, Philip. Sorry for going slightly long again. We always do this. So it's a 1 hour recording now, but 15 minutes extra on the discussions before we started.
Yep. Always.
Always happens. Yeah. So but thank you for this one. And for the recording 365, we'll get obviously go to the video notes or the podcast notes, and you'll see all of the articles from there and the YouTube channel so people can find what's relevant and what we talk about in here. But I think that's it for this one. So thank you, everybody, for watching or listening, depending on which source you're actually using. And we'll be back within a week. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hey, thank you, Philip. Thank you.
Thanks,
bye.
Bye. Bye, guys.